Dr. Alan Leica here, and I'd like to welcome you to How to Live a Fantastic Life show, where we will be discussing the important aspects of your life. We hope to inspire you to live the best life you can. Get out of your comfort zone and explore the awesome world around you. Break through your barriers. Take inspired action. Use the difficulties in your life to achieve the best version of you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm really proud to announce a special guest today, Joel Goldberg. As a television personality for the Kansas City Royals since 2008, Joel's name has become synonymous with the world-famous baseball team. He was behind the scenes and worked inside the clubhouse and the relationships that brought a unique perspective on the culture that translates to business success. Recognizing the principles of baseball could be utilized in the business world and the world of success, because really, this is one of those things that apply to so many things as time goes on. And Joel has been a survivor through all this. He's adapted to the times. And it's amazing how adaption is the main principle we've had to live by, because everything has been changing and everything keeps changing as we go on. And that is the world of baseball, and that's the world of business, and that's the world of life as we've seen it in the last couple of years. Welcome, Joel.
It's good to be with you, and thanks for the intro. And that's it, right? I mean, that's one of the things that I like to tell people too. I mean, the sports world, if you're a sports fan, or even if not, it's different. It's unique. It's, you know, whether you like sports or theater or whatever your entertainment is, it could be pretty high profile, but it's really not all that different than anything else. The world's constantly changing. It's still about people. And we've had to deal with a lot of that the last couple of years. It's been different with the pandemic, but we're still here. And we're still, I always say that the show goes on one way or another.
Yeah. And I am always amazed by how everybody says it's the end of the world and everything is going to be bad and everything is going to end, and it's never as bad as it could be, and it's never as good as it could be. Mm-hmm. But we keep thinking that, you know, it's something that's in our subconscious that seems to drive us that way.
Yeah. And maybe that's the way we're wired. You know, you may have a better feel on that one than me, but I do think that there's something about that glass half full, that optimism that really can push you through the tough times. And so, you know, these last couple of years have not been what we expected, but I do believe that those that figure out a way, I mean, there are really only two ways you could go: either give up on it, you know, try something else or quit or whatever it is, or figure out a way and move on. And I think that there's always a lane for those of us that are optimistic and willing to embrace what that change is, to be able to thrive with it. I mean, if you look at even the podcasting world and what you're doing right now, these tools were all available before, but we've become better accustomed to them. And now it opens up the world. You know, you can visit with more people via Zoom. You can connect with people that maybe before you only thought you could do in person. And again, these tools aren't totally new, but I don't think many of us were using them. And so I just always look at challenges and difficult times as opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, the Japanese in ancient culture have this symbol that means crisis. And part of the symbol means opportunity, and the other part means danger. So in that very same word are two things that have very different endings.
I think there's also something too that danger doesn't necessarily have to be bad. I mean, of course, it is to some extent, right? But is it possible that danger can lead to something good? Is it possible that danger forces us, or let me rephrase it a little bit, that danger is going to force us into going one of two directions? And, you know, I'm not someone that, I don't know that I'm someone that runs into a burning building. I mean, I'd like to think that I'd run in there and try to be the hero and help someone. I'm not someone with any military background. I had someone that did one of those personality culture tests that said, you know, if some kind of terrorist attack broke out, that you would thrive in that situation. And I said, I have no military background at all. But one thing that I would say is being in live television for 28 years, which, let me be very clear, cannot in any way equate to any type of tragedy or attack or anything like that. But you have to be able to think on your feet. You know, one of the things that I struggled with early in my career, and I was always amazed at some of the veterans, was that how do they go in front of a live television camera without a script? Or how are they able to go and just talk for 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes at a time without looking down at all those notes? And I couldn't understand it until I understood it, until it became part of who I was. And then it was just react. You know, we oftentimes can be so comfortable with a script, but what happens when that danger does come? What happens when something goes in a different way that you didn't plan on? Well, that's every day. That's moments throughout the day. That's, you know, baseball terms, what I like to say, hitting the curveball. It doesn't always come in straight to you. So how do you adapt to it and adjust?
Yeah, and I've always liked, in football, my favorite players have been the running backs, the guys that have to make it up as they go along, because all the time these people are coming at them trying to kill them, and yet they have to figure it out when they're going through this morass of players that are trying to literally nail them all the time.
Right, and there's also an element of creativity to that. You've got to be able to think. You've got to be able to adjust. You've got to be able to adapt. I like the running back analogy there, because those guys start with a plan. All right, you're going to get the ball. You're going to go through this hole. Wait a minute. That hole closed up, or maybe somebody didn't block the way they were supposed to, or someone was there that wasn't supposed to be. Well, what else do you see? There's a lot there about vision. There's a lot there about creativity. There's a lot there about adaptability.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to you, Joel. How did you end up in the broadcasting world? I know that was not your chosen path, but you ended up there and you ended up adapting to it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I always loved sports, all sports. And my two favorite sports were baseball and hockey, which ended up being the two that I've spent the most time in. And I've covered a lot of football, a lot of championship football too. I mean, I was, you being a football guy, and this movie's out recently, although I haven't seen it yet. I was the sideline reporter for the preseason game in St. Louis in 1999. I think it would have been about August 1999, when the star quarterback Trent Green got hurt and they brought in a guy by the name of Kurt Warner. And there I was watching the absolute beginning of a Hall of Fame career of a former grocery store stocker turned eventual Hall of Fame football player. And so I've been fortunate for 28 years to be able to be around for stories like that. As a kid, I of course wanted to be a star athlete. I wasn't one. I was mediocre at best. I didn't know what I would go into, but actually what I thought I wanted to do was be like the local guy on the news that talked about the sports. And that's what I pursued. Now, growing up, we didn't have the massive amount of television back then that we do now. So, you know, those jobs were pretty simple. You could be the play-by-play guy, or you could be on the news. And some of my heroes were the local sports guy. But over time, I found roles with teams that I never expected. And there weren't pre- and post-game shows when I was a kid, but now I do over 300 shows a summer for the Royals or for the network, depending on how many games a year we are contracted to televise, usually around 160. So 160 pregame shows, 160 postgame shows. The show is called Royals Live. Everything is live. I never could have imagined doing that. No teleprompter, we've got a format that we follow, but a lot of it is kind of freewheeling because you don't know what the results are going to be and how you're going to react to them. But I would just say real quickly too, that I almost never made it. When I graduated from college, or I believe as you all might say, north of the border university, I'm quarter Canadian, by the way. So my maternal grandmother and all of her siblings were raised in Montreal. and now have relatives all over Canada. And then and my mom's first cousin for many years was actually the editor in chief of the Globe and Mail. But anyway, I digress. I couldn't find a job and I was very ready to give up and take a job at the local restaurant by my parents' house where I'd grown up in Chicago. And I'd worked there throughout high school and college. Ironically, they ended up offering me to manage the place. It was a hot dog stand. Twice as much as I would make in my first television job, but I couldn't get any traction. And I tell audiences, I'm a speaker too. I tell audiences all the time, what makes you different? Because there's a lot of all of us out there in every profession. And at this time, there's no internet. Email is just starting. And I had something like 25 rejection letters from small television stations across the United States. And so I started picking up the phone and cold calling TV stations. And I'm not a cold caller at all. I hate it, like a lot of people. And I basically started saying, hey, I'm passing through your town next week or in 2 weeks. Would you be there on Wednesday or Thursday? Would you be there at any point? And as soon as they said yes, I scheduled my trip to those towns. I was never going to those towns. And so suddenly I started shaking hands, driving all over the country, you know, pull into town, go to the McDonald's, put on a very cheap, you know, sport coat and something that resembled dress pants and a tie. And I would go in and meet and shake a hand for 5 minutes or sometimes get a tour and sit down for 45 minutes. And suddenly all the job offers came in and I was off and running.
Well, that's amazing. And you know, this is what shows about persistence and tenacity mm-hmm. and perseverance. The words that I think differentiates the winners from the losers, because I think that trait in itself is what differentiates people in such a way that it makes them winners or losers. What's your take on that?
Well, I agree. And I think this is true with everything. I was just having a conversation with an executive about the pandemic and the progress that his company had made during the pandemic. And again, this sort of gets back to the discussion about the danger and, you know, are you going to thrive or are you going to fold on this one? And I think that there are enough people that are going to not be up to the challenge. And that's not a knock on them, but some people embrace it and some don't. So what it does is it creates a lane for so many of the rest of us. And so not everybody has that tenacity. I interviewed recently the founder and CEO of a wealth management company, and he is net worth. I think there's a B, you know, at the end of his net worth or somewhere in there, I believe. But he said something to me that was very simplistic, yet a great reminder. He said, you still can always control your hustle. Now, he wasn't saying that if you hustle that you're going to make your billion, but if you don't, you're not. And so I think that tenacity that you're talking about, that ability to control what you can control, you can't always control the results, but you can control the output. And so in my case, even to this day, you know, some of the guys that I graduated with that were studying television and journalism, they never got into it. And quite frankly, I think they probably made more money, certainly early on, as I was making almost no money in that first small town TV job. I mean, small town in northern Wisconsin and, you know, no money to be had. But they didn't want to go that extra route. And that's fine. I don't begrudge them for that. They ended up going into marketing or PR or whatever else it was and probably got paid a lot more money. But I've heard from some of those people over the years, I bump into them at a baseball game when I'm in their city or whatever. And they say, "Why? How cool is it that you're still doing this? That's just amazing. I would have loved to have done that." But, and so I think that there will always be an avenue and a lane for those of us that are willing to work hard. And it's not quite as simple as that, but I think that tenacity, passion, hard work. I haven't mentioned also the way you treat people, the way you go about your business, being authentic, all of those, you put those together and it's generally going to lead to something magical.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I once had the privilege of going to the broadcast room for an ABC or NBC baseball mm-hmm. game, and it was magic. I mean, here you have these announcers that are spouting these statistics on this guy and this third baseman who did this amazing thing and there's a whole team of 20 people that are just researching this and whispering in his ear at every time yes. that one of these pauses come up and they need to fill in some of the airspace. Isn't baseball a team sport at all levels? Oh. I mean, from coaching to the players to the broadcasters to the whole thing. Without that team, it would never be what it is.
100%. And I think that's true with most professions. I recently on my podcast, I interviewed a federal judge, which was pretty cool for me because, you know, that's not something I do every single day. And I should back it up and just say that, you know, I'm also a motivational speaker and podcast host, more about leadership, team building, and then there's some sports references in there. But my point is that, well, what would a federal judge, how would that play into what you just said? Well, he said he's nothing without his clerks and all of his team, and that he is a better judge and a smarter judge and a more prepared judge because of all of those people. It's the same thing with us. The interesting thing about it is when you start, if you start small in television, you do everything. So my first TV job in a town called Rhinelander, Wisconsin, population, I think it was about, I think about 8,000 people, something like that. And Edmonton type of weather, maybe not quite as cold, but it was up there and in quite a bit of snow, a lot of outdoor sports in the winter. But anyway, I was the reporter. I was the writer. I was the producer. I was the cameraman. I was the editor and oftentimes the anchor. And we had other people, but you kind of were siloed, not siloed in one job, siloed in you were the job. You know, you were the old expression in our business was a one-man band. You had to do everything. And then as you climb the ranks, those teams started becoming available to you. And it was, well, you're not allowed to shoot a camera. We have people to do that. You're not allowed to edit. We have people to do that, which in itself was a challenge because you need to learn how to trust people. You need to learn how to let people do their jobs. Now, to your question, we have unbelievable teams. I mean, at the level of broadcasting Major League Baseball, people say all the time, well, you guys know everything. I say, no, I just have easier access to the information because of the people that I'm surrounded by. And I know how to look all that stuff up, but instead of having to spend 8 hours looking it up, when I wake up every morning during baseball season, our research producer has already, he's an early morning guy. He has already sent us every single day a 7-page attachment with all the notes that we could possibly want about that night's game. So take that times 160 times a year. And now you get the notes later in the day from the team that they put out. And then you start talking to people and then you get this and you get your graphics. And so it's interesting to me. Let's just say that if our graphics are down, it happens, right? Technical difficulties. We're all used to that with Zoom. And the pitch speed suddenly isn't up there on the screen. And fans will start to send me tweets. Where's the pitch speed? What's going on? Where is this? And they're not necessarily blaming me, but they don't know who else to talk to. I'm the only one they know because I'm the one they see. The greater message is there are so many people behind the scenes that do all this amazing work. And when something goes wrong, when there's a technical difficulty, it happens when you're dealing with technology, that it becomes very evident that this amazing work that's part of a team that makes us smarter and look better and sound better, the audio, the quality of the video, the lighting, all this type of stuff doesn't happen because of us, but all people see is us. There's a huge team behind it.
Yeah. And, you know, I've always said the Zoom technology, this broadcasting technology is equivalent to doing a moonshot over and over and over again, because it is so complicated. I mean, there's speakers, there's buttons, there's this and that, and everything. One thing could drop the whole mission, just like the O-rings on the stupid space shuttle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thankfully, without as much at stake.
Yeah.
The space shuttle. But you're right. And I say this all the time, too. I mean, name me any profession outside of, I don't know, the solopreneur, I guess. But there are a handful where it's just one person. But even think in sports, the singles tennis player or, you know, the golf star. Well, what about the nutritionist? What about the trainer? What about the publicist? What about on and on and on and on? It's never just one person. And so,
well, I probably would disagree. You know, I was a cosmetic surgeon in my former life, and that's one person that's saving
it.
The person that he really is the guy that has to be right 99.9% of the times. Errors not permitted, just like a pilot on a plane. And you don't have rear view mirrors. You have to keep going forward and making sure you don't make mistakes in any particular way, because that would devastate the operation.
Right. I mean, and there are different stakes, obviously, and there's different, but I would still get back, and you know this better than me, you know, to being that cosmetic surgeon, and maybe you were doing all this yourself, but who was booking those appointments? Who was doing the intake? Who was doing all of those things? If you had someone doing those, then that made you better, because you shouldn't have been worrying about that.
Well, and I agree. Those are things that made me better so I could do my job better.
That's right.
And that's what it's all about. You need those people around you so you can do your best thing and your best things consistently so you can be the best at what you are.
Right. And I would suggest that your being, you know, close to 100%, almost 100% accurate was a lot more significant than me being 100% accurate on television. Now, I got to be accurate, and there's certainly some rules that I need to abide by, and some of them pertain to certain four-letter words and things like that really shouldn't ever be said. We know all of that. But for the most part, if I make a mistake, and in live television, I'm going to make mistakes every single day. I'll put it to you this way. I was really fortunate enough. I think the highlight of my career, beyond the obvious stuff of a world championship and this and that and on, but the highlight of my career professionally was I got to travel over to the Middle East in 2018, and the team and the network had asked if I would want to go with a few former, you know, retired players to entertain the troops on a USO tour in Kuwait over September 11th. And, you know, a lot of years we'll bring the troops in via satellite during September 11th or, a big holiday, and they're watching the game and we check in with them, or we bring their families to the stadium and we reunite them out. But this was, they actually asked me to go. And so from 3 to 6 in the morning, I was reporting with the troops while the game was going on in Kansas City. And the highlight, you know, the most meaningful thing of my career. And George Brett, maybe the greatest third baseman of all time and the Hall of Famer and lifetime Kansas City Royal, he was on that trip with me. And every base that we went to in Kuwait, he would say to these people, basically along the same lines, he would say, you know, people say that I'm one of the greatest hitters of all time. He says, I was successful at the plate 3 out of 10 times. I had a, you know, 300 plus batting average, which means I failed 70% of the time. He said, you here in the military, it's possible that if you fail 1% of the time, somebody's coming home in a wooden box. So, you know, the margin for error, depending on that profession, can be different. But back to your original point, right? So like that's the military level, the space shuttle. Okay, then you have the doctors and you know, in the ER, that is life and death. I think my stuff for the most part is not going to be life and death, but you know, you're wrong enough times, you're not going to be around very long. And so, and back to where you were going with this originally to start, when you have good teams around you to make you better or enable you to focus on what you are there to do, then that's where you pour your energy into. And if you're good at what you do, you're going to continue to do so.
Exactly. Well, you know, this show, Joel, is called How to Live a Fantastic Life. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask you a poignant question. Joel, how do you live a fantastic life? And how do you bring that forward despite all the adversity, all the stuff that keeps going on in your daily life these days? Yeah.
It's not easy too, because we're in this day and age, we're pulled in a million directions. And I think that's probably always been the case, but we're pulled now in quicker directions because of the social media, because of the cell phone. So it is, you know, all of our attention spans are not what they once were, and we're distracted. But in terms of leading a best life, a happy life, a good life, I think, and this can sound simplistic, it's extremely complicated. When you can find purpose in what you do, that is really, really enlightening. And I'll tell it to you this way, Doc. I mean, the early on in my career, my answer was always, I'm living a great life. They pay me to talk about baseball. What more could I need? And that's true. I mean, it's a fun job, but I think at a certain point you start to say, okay, why am I doing this? What is my purpose? And when you find that why, I think you lead a more purposeful life, a more driven life, and a happier life. And so to me, what I found, I'll get back to the military here for a moment, is what I started to see over time. Now, keep in mind, I got to Kansas City in 2008. This was my fifth job and still fifth job in television. And this was the best one. This was the one that pretty quickly had me saying, this is exactly where I want to be. So that in itself is a beautiful thing. When you get to a job and you're like, wait a minute, I don't want to look for the next one. I like this one. And that's hard to do. So that certainly brought a lot of happiness. But then what happened was I started to hear from people. One of the positives of social media, hey, my mother or my father or my grandmother is in the hospital or in hospice. And you know, she doesn't have a whole lot of time left. But I wanted to let you know that the one thing keeping her going or the one thing every day she enjoys is watching you on TV. Whoa, wait a minute. I'm having an impact on someone's life. That's not about a win or a loss. Or I'd hear from a service member, a military man or woman overseas. Your game was on the American Forces Network last night, and we got a chance to watch. I got up at 2 or 3 in the morning, and it was an amazing game. And I would think it was a 13-0 game with a 3-hour rain delay. It was a pretty miserable night at the ballpark, actually. Wait a minute. They didn't care about the win or loss. They just wanted a piece of home, and I get a chance to bring that to them. So that's not anything I ever signed up for. And so that's a perspective for me every single day. And then as a speaker now too, you get off stage and somebody comes up and says, hey, I really learned this from you, or I've got a different perspective now on this job. I don't really want to stay here much longer. I'm not all that happy, but I think I know now what to do to stay and be productive. And so just finding these little ways that you can help others every single day have enabled me to lead a more purposeful life. And I think that when you find purpose, you end up being happy and finding a place, if that all makes sense.
That is exactly it, Joel. You've hit the nail on the head. Well, Joel, our time together has rapidly gone by, and I would like to know how people can get in touch with the world of Joel Goldberg, just in case they'd like to get in touch with you or perhaps get your amazing book that's out there. I think they need some more access to you.
Well, I appreciate that. I think the easiest way is just to go to my website, which is joelgoldbergmedia.com, J-O-E-L-G-O-L-D-B-E-R-G, joelgoldbergmedia.com. And there's a lot on there about the speaking, the book, and the podcast, Rounding the Bases. And it's great to be with you. And I love Canada. I wish, I'm not pandering here, but I told you I've got all the relatives. And so one of my favorite trips every year is when the Royals go up to play the Blue Jays. And I hope they get baseball back in Montreal. I used to grow up visiting family, going to some games at least once a year in the summer up at Olympic Stadium. They need baseball in Montreal. Anyway, I digress. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Joel, for being here. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.
You've been listening to How to Live a Fantastic Life. Be sure and pick up a copy of Dr. Leica's book, The Secrets to Living a Fantastic Life, on Amazon.com. And you'll want to subscribe right here on this page so you don't miss a single episode. Have a fantastic day.